This is our fourth call-in show for Radio Free Northwest. The date is July the 9th, 2015, and we're sitting here waiting for our first call. Hey, you're on Radio Free Northwest. Who am I speaking with?
Trucker.
Hey, Trucker.
Hi.
I was going to try to make it up there, but all the vehicles up and disappeared on me, so I'm just stuck here with a company car, so can't take that. So
yeah.
Figure I go and drop in and say hi.
Oh, well, hi. You just got back a couple of days ago. Where were you at?
Well, I just got back actually early this morning, and I've been bouncing back and forth across the country. It was down in Florida and then up in New Jersey and Pennsylvania, and my last load brought me out here from Pennsylvania.
All right. We played that one that you did in Florida on this week's Radio Free Northwest.
Yes, I was down there in Florida. Yeah, I was delivered in Miami and loaded in St. Petersburg.
You probably get out and about on the rest of the North American continent more so than most of us. What's it like out there? I haven't actually been outside the homeland in almost 13 years. What's it like now out on the East Coast and on the various other coasts and in the heartland and flyover country, et cetera, et cetera?
Flyover country, it's not like what it was up there in Baltimore and stuff, but no matter where I go, I always see the cardboard sign people, and it's the season for them at most exits where the truck stops and where we get off the highway at. Doesn't make any difference what color they are. They're out there more white than any other color, seems like, out there begging for money. A lot of them seem to be out of work and nowhere to go.
Do you see many, what they, I believe they were calling Obamavilles at one point or another, basically hobo jungles that are full of dispossessed and...
Yeah, I see some of those. One of the cold storage warehouses we load at down there in Riverside, California, you just look over the hill and you can see the whole sea of tents under the trees.
I have to say that, to my knowledge, we don't have that up here in the Northwest homeland. Things are not good, not ideal here, but the impression I get is that things up here in the Northwest are infinitely better than they are anywhere else in the continent, and that's just another good reason to come home. Hey, you're on Radio Free Northwest. Who are we speaking with?
This is Richard Stanley.
Now, we've got Richard from Nevada, and we got the Trucker on. How's things down there in Nevada, Richard?
Good as it can be, I guess you'd say. A bunch of storms.
You're going into the hot season down there, right? Nevada, just about every month is the hot season out there in the desert area.
Well, it's the high desert, so you got the snow season, and then you get the hot season.
Anyway, the Trucker was telling us about some of the things he's been seeing around the country by way of beggars and Obamavilles and whatnot. I mean, the impression I get off, admittedly, the internet, that might not be the most correct source of information in the world, but the impression I'm getting is that the rest of the country outside the homeland is really starting to deteriorate, and it's becoming noticeable. I know that a lot of the new people that come up here to the homeland are astounded at the relative appearance of normality, which a large part of the country is losing.
One other thing I want to add about what you're talking about is that Seattle is floating the idea of eliminating the zoning for single-family housing. It's got to be multiple-family housing, apartments in other words, because they're running out of room. People say this is also part of Agenda 21, which I don't doubt. Nevertheless, the booming economy, no kidding, in Seattle is bringing more and more people into Seattle, and the result is they're running out of places to live.
One of our comrades sent me an article. I haven't had time to fully digest it yet. It just came in this morning. But apparently the latest program of the regime is something that will affect something like 1,200 municipalities throughout the country. And they're going to deny federal funds to cities that have zoning ordinances that prohibit things like multifamily dwellings and so forth in wealthy neighborhoods, quote unquote. The tagline on this is that a zip code should not determine a child's future. What they're doing basically is they're going to try and bring in housing projects and apartments into the all-white neighborhoods that ring most cities. Again, they're busting up white areas, busting up Republican voting districts, and they're deliberately importing non-whites into white areas. And since we now live in a dictatorship and we have a Congress that is as useless as tits on a bull as far as opposing anything the regime does, this is probably going to pass. And so that's going to be a little story for the next 10 years, is white neighborhoods all over the country being broken up and being forced to accept large tenement-like blocks of housing for blacks and illegal aliens, or they won't be illegal by then. So that's one of the main items on the great agenda that's going to be accomplished during Obama's sunset years. So that's coming down the pike.
They need to find a place for all these 2,000 Muslims he's bringing in.
Well, he's bringing in more than that. Apparently, this plan to settle Syrians in Idaho is genuine. It hasn't actually come to fruition yet. Good evening. You're on Radio Free Northwest. Who am I speaking with?
Emmett from Iowa.
You're on Radio Free Northwest. Who am I speaking with? Oh, hey, Lord Lucan. Okay, well, let's see if we can bring you into the conference. Okay, we got Lord Lucan back, and let's... Good evening, you're on Radio Free Northwest. Who am I speaking with?
This is Emmett from Iowa again.
Emmett from Iowa. How's things going out there amongst all the corn stalks?
Oh, it's going pretty well. Can't complain.
What did you want to talk about this evening?
My question was, how will the Northwest Front convert people or get them to our way of thinking out in the homeland?
If you listen to Radio Northwest, you know how we're doing it. As I was just pointing out, the fact is that conditions in this part of the country are much better than anywhere else in North America right now. And as I mentioned on last Radio Free Northwest, a lot of people are coming here just off their own bat. They don't even know that I or the NF or Northwest Novels even exist. The word is getting out there that the Northwest is probably about the nicest remaining place in the country to live, and so in a way our homeland sells itself.
I was wondering about how in Norway, Sweden, and Hungary and Jobbik, Europeans have more of a, and you know, even the English Defense League, but in America we don't really have, I can't think of a single group besides the Northwest Front that's like that.
That is a good question. Well, for one thing, I've lived in Europe, and one thing about Europe is it's small and it's crowded compared to us, especially Britain. You've got millions and millions of people on this tiny little island that just can't support that kind of population. They're getting the same problem in Ireland now. These two little islands are just too small to hold all those people and keep a modern technological society going, especially when a large number of those people are essentially unassimilable aliens who are not really adaptable to a Western society to begin with, and yet the immigration just keeps coming and coming and coming and more, and it's like a lifeboat in the middle of a shipwreck, and just too many people are trying to climb on the lifeboat, and the rest of Europe is the same way. I understand Italy is just getting inundated right now. It looks like every wog and every nigger in the world is trying to flee to Europe, and it's getting to the point where even some of the liberals in Europe are starting to understand that, look, we can't take this. But because of this incredible overrunning effect, and because of the fact that the people in Europe, the white people, don't have any place to run to, there is much more of a mass reaction. I am not really sanguine about their chances because they're trying to use democracy, but the trouble is, here in this country, we still have what is essentially a big, huge continent, even huger if you count Canada. And the fact is that in this country, on this continent, the white men will always have some place to run to. And our natural instinct as white boys, as we've been acculturated by the past 50 years of propaganda, is when confronted by the racial problem, always run away. The latest thing now is what's called exurbs, which is small little towns outside the cities, maybe 60, 70 miles outside. It used to be that when you had to move to get away from the niggers and get away from the diversity, you'd go to some suburb of, you know, St. Louis, Atlanta, Chicago, wherever. But in essence, the problem is now following. And as I was saying earlier, the government is now coming up with a program whereby large cities and large suburbs of cities are going to be denied federal funds if they don't basically get rid of their zoning laws and allow for the construction of, in essence, tenements, apartment buildings, and whatnot in single-family neighborhoods that are zoned for single families. In other words, white areas where white people still live in houses, and they're just going to be confronted with massive blocks of tenements like the Cabrini Green Housing Project in Chicago, full of niggers and illegal aliens and Middle Easterners and God knows what. So the regime is now trying to break up the remaining white areas in the urban like, and what's going to happen then is the whites are going to flee even further. Although it's going to take a few decades, and they're going out now to what's called these exurbs, etc. But the fact is, as opposed to Europe, the white man in this country still has some place to run. The Europeans don't. And because of that, because all these foreigners are coming in and taking the remaining benefits of the socialist welfare states that they've been used to all their lives, all of a sudden, basically, there's not enough to go around. This is part of what's happening in Greece right now. Did anyone else want to interrupt my rant?
I had a little rant. You guys have probably all heard William Pierce's Murdering Iowa speech.
I haven't heard that one.
That would have been quite long ago since Pierce died in 2002.
It was about Postville and how there's this...
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah, the Rubushkin family and their little kosher slaughter plant there. Oh, yeah. That situation I'm familiar with.
I was just reading today that I never heard of it before, but there's these things called sanctuary cities.
Mm-hmm.
It's with the local government, the sheriff's office and the town hall. They won't enforce ICE deportations of illegal immigrants. They have to get a court order from a higher judge or...
Yeah, there's some very large cities. San Francisco is one of them.
They just reap the rewards of that policy when that illegal alien who'd been deported five times shot and killed a white woman for no apparent reason as they were walking down the Embarcadero.
Well, now we have damn near half the state is these sanctuary cities. In Postville, in 2008, I believe, that was the largest ICE raid or illegal immigrant raid in history. And same thing happened in Marshalltown. I think almost near 300 people got deported.
For those of you who aren't familiar with that, the town of Postville, Iowa, was almost taken over by Hasidic Jews. A family named Rubashkin came out from New York, and they set up a big kosher slaughtering plant. They were producing at one stage some huge percentage, a quarter or a third of the kosher meat or whatever in the country. It was big. And they also ran a filthy plant. It was staffed by nothing but illegal aliens. They were cruel to the animals. They were spreading disease. It was a health hazard and a safety hazard. The conditions on the floor were horrible. These Mexicans and Hondurans or whatnot were literally walking up to their knees in blood and guts, and it was just hideous. And some animal rights people, as I recall, got in there, and they took some films of this kosher slaughter, and it was pretty horrific. And eventually, they managed to finally get the government to pay some attention to what was going on out there, and they raided the place. They arrested, something like 300 illegals at once.
When it happened in Marshalltown, I was in high school then, and the class sizes were about 30 people, and it was only me and like three or four other people in the whole class. Like, half the school was gone. A lot of people think Iowa is still this white state and everything, but unless you live way on the boonies like I do, in a really tiny town, there's all the big cities with more than 30,000 people or so. It's all Mexicans and niggers and Kenyans. Yep.
Well, they've come in and they've taken all the entry-level jobs. It was kind of like down in Astoria, Oregon, where I used to live. A lot of times, a white kid coming out of high school right now has no chance to get any kind of proper job that's going to enable him to start his life, you know, get married and start a family, anything like that. Because, basically, the illegals have taken all the entry-level jobs in that part of the world.
It's like the only job that you don't have a college education for are the packing plants, basically. And that's, I was like a team of 30 or 40 white people in a plant of 2,000 Mexicans and niggers.
Yeah, I think Reno's probably one of the only cities that actually gives someone coming out of school actual chance with the jobs and stuff. Because they got that new Tesla company that came in and is creating 50,000 new jobs here for them.
Tesla?
The car company.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Electric car.
I was thinking of Nikola Tesla.
Well, they
named
it
after
him.
That's what I thought when I first seen it.
Good evening. You're on Radio Free Northwest. Who am I speaking with, please?
Hi, this is Stefan.
Hey, how's it going, Stefan?
All right, I'll just start here with something that I had just came up with today. The last Republican politicians in America who used to represent white people, they now have openly turned their backs on whites. This morning I saw Jenny so-and-so, who claims to be a descendant of Jefferson Davis, was screaming and crying in the South Carolina Congress about removing the symbol of hate, the Confederate flag. Then you got Donald Trump talks about Mexicans in fairly mild terms, and they all turned on him because they want the spick vote, and lobbyists want the cheap labor. So, like, an American to them doesn't mean a white person anymore. A black or a Mexican is the same. In fact, it's better for those Republicans to have other races, apparently. I think the realization of this will drive a lot more folks to look elsewhere outside the political process.
Well, one can only hope. I personally admit I kind of like to see Republicans win elections because I just like to see those idiots on the Huffington Post and Salon Magazine scream and scream and scream. But I am under no illusions about Republicans. I haven't forgotten 8 years of Jug Ears Bush. I know that they're no better than Democrats and that they're, if anything, even worse, race traitors. I think their behavior in the face of Obama's coup d'etat in November the 20th, 2014 has been just shameful. I think it's now obvious that they're being bribed with this Pacific Trade Pact thing through just billions and billions of dollars to their corporate cronies and creating corporations as, in essence, sovereign entities and sovereign countries almost. I think that was the bribe that they accepted in order to not oppose Obama's seizure of power back in November. And so, yeah, they're pretty disgusting. Now, as far as all of these things going on, I have to be honest, I am not as upset about all this Confederate flag stuff as you might think. Because South Carolina and Mississippi are now almost, if not totally, non-white states, majority non-white. If you add in the illegal Mexican population, they are probably are majority non-white. I've lived in Charleston. It's a beautiful place, but the Charleston that I knew many, many years ago is now gone. And I have come to accept that. Folks, we are losing on every front. I have told you what to do about it. You need to come here to the Northwest homeland, start building communities, start building our own support systems and our own networks and infrastructures, and prepare for a time when we'll be able to create our own sovereign nation here. This is the solution. There isn't any other, and this probably is going to sound pretty bad, but I think we need to, frankly, stop sobbing and moaning over the Confederate flag and all of these things that we've lost, because they are lost. The time.
No, it's actually time for people to stand up and start doing something about it.
Exactly. Well, I've told people what to do about it. Right now, there is only one solution. We have got to somehow achieve and maintain a sovereign white nation somewhere on the North American continent that is solely for the use of our own people, which does not have a single black or brown face or hose nose in there anywhere. I don't know how else to keep on conveying this except to repeating it over and over and over again. Come home. We have been shown by history, by necessity, by economics, however you want to put it, that the United States of America, as we know it, as I knew it when I was growing up, is doomed. It is not going to continue. There's going to be a Soviet-style breakup. How else can I just keep on saying and saying it? Come home. We have the solution.
Yeah, one person can't do it by themselves.
What is the point of the Confederate flag flying over a South Carolina state house where the governor is some kind of female wog? I mean, for God's sake. What is the point in the Confederate flag being on the Mississippi state flag when Mississippi is about 70% nigger?
Exactly. As far as I know, there was never no niggers in the Confederate Army.
Well, they had drovers and servants, and they used nigger work gangs to build fortifications and that sort of stuff, but no nigger soldier. That's the one thing that really messed up, if I can digress a little here, one of the potentially best movies ever made called Ride with the Devil about Quantrill. It's like they were just too frightened to make a completely, totally pro-Confederate movie, and so they just had to put in the nigger Confederate, which is just, it's deranged. It's
asinine. It never existed. It was like trying to put a piece of history that didn't belong in there.
Well, I mean, there just weren't any. And I always had a problem, even back when I was living in the South, with these reenactor types who were so scared that the government and the powers that be were going to come and take away their little Confederate toys and their uniforms and their black powder rifles and wouldn't let them go out and march around and pretend to be brave like their ancestors on the weekends. So they kept coming up with this stuff about how, It wasn't about race. It was about heritage. Well, of course, actually, it wasn't really about race. It was about economics. All wars are economic in nature, but race was definitely part of the equation. And the most inane-sounding thing that I ever heard was some reenactor doing a little presentation on the state capitol grounds, and he said, well, the Civil War wasn't about slavery. It was about jobs, which, no.
The South wanted to keep their slaves. And in fact, like Abraham Lincoln, he said that if they didn't want to work no more, then they could go get on a boat and go back home.
Well, he was actually going to repatriate them back to Africa when the war was over, which was probably the reason he was assassinated by a conspiracy on the part of his own cabinet.
Yep.
Specifically Edwin Stanton and Colonel Lafayette C. Baker, who was the head of the Secret Service at the time.
Actually, slavery was on its way out in the South as well as the North. Jefferson Davis believed there should be a period of time to get the Negroes ready for freedom, and that was like typically 5 years or so. And others, like Robert E. Lee, believed they should be emancipated immediately. That was what was going on in the South.
Yeah.
To characterize this as a war of freedom versus slavery is just pure political propaganda. In fact, you should read the text of the Emancipation Proclamation. It freed no one ever, and it was totally incapable of doing so. You read it and you laugh.
What the Emancipation Proclamation was an attempt to get the slaves in Confederate territory to revolt, and it failed.
Yep,
it was the 13th and 14th Amendment that actually abolished slavery legally. We don't know our own history. We're not allowed to know our own history.
No, they want us to know everybody else's history and not American history.
Now, I've read scholarly dissertations of various kinds that stated that if there had been no Civil War, slavery as a system and as a legal institution would probably have died out about 1890 or so. It would have taken another 30 years, and we would have avoided the loss of 400,000 dead white men, and God knows how many mangled and mutilated by cannonballs and Minea balls and whatnot. The South had some chances to win, and just a combination of circumstances and lack of resources and occasionally bad generalship just didn't quite cut it. Also, just plain bad luck. Good evening. You're on Radio Free Northwest. Who am I speaking with?
Hi. This is Dave in Alaska.
Good evening. This is Radio Free Northwest. Who am I speaking with?
Yeah, it's Richard.
Richard?
Yeah, I'm sitting in Florida, and...
And we now have seven people in the conference call, and new people are Dave from Alaska and Richard from Florida. Dave, what can we do for you tonight?
Try not to take up a whole bunch of your time. I just have kind of a question. When I'm trying to spread racial awareness to guys that I know and stuff like that, people I work with, everything, as you probably know, Harold, most of our people can't seem to see what's just directly in front of their face.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a tendency to look at crime statistics, right, and point those out because it seems to be tangible, something that somebody can actually grab onto, even though, like I said, you know, the evidence is right in front of their face. I've been, as of late, doing a little research into the situation in South Africa, and it's very alarming, and other the listeners here don't know about it. They should really do some research to see just how bad things can really get. One of the things that I've read about recently is that the South African government has stopped compiling statistics, crime statistics, based on race. I guess my question to you is twofold. Is that likely, do you think that is likely to happen in North America anytime soon or in the United States? And the second part is, if it does, how does an individual like myself continue to go about spreading racial awareness to others?
I don't think it'll happen anytime soon, largely because of Newton's, I think it's third law of motion about inertia. A body that's in motion tends to remain in motion, and a body that's at rest tends to remain at rest. And there's a kind of a bureaucratic application of that. The FBI and other various government statistical bodies have been keeping these statistics for a long, long time, and we now have a system of government which is so cumbersome, so inefficient, so incompetent, so quavering with senility, that it's almost impossible to create any actual change. And like all bureaucracies, I think the FBI and others will resist change. So I think that's going to militate against the actual not keeping of statistics. Now, what might happen is that certain crime statistics may be sort of classified as a matter of national security or something and simply withheld from us.
I think there's a little bit more to that. Already, the government's putting out phony statistics. Economically, it's very obvious. And politically, in terms of crime, the fact that the FBI classifies as white, a Hispanic who commits a crime, but as Hispanic, some Hispanic who is a victim of crime. So already that skews the official statistics, and there are other things like that going on. For example, the U.S. debt, the total debt of the United States government has been frozen for several months if you look at the webpage, the official government webpage that lists it. So things like that are beginning to happen. Yeah, there are statistics for all those things. They're still keeping them, but they're either grossly out of date or more likely just false statistics.
Well, I mean, they called George Zimmerman white, for God's sake. I mean, take one look at the man. Yeah. He's not. He's a beaner. He's a mestizo of some kind. I think he's like half Indian and half Jew. That really does tend to skew a lot of the racially oriented statistics of various kinds in this country, is that a lot of Hispanics claim to be white, or else they're recognized by the government as white.
There's another very important one, and that is the racial makeup of the United States. What percentage of the United States as a whole is white? The UN has one definition. The United States government has another. You and I have yet another. The problem with the UN is they include a lot of people who have no European white ancestry. They include them as white if they're Middle Eastern, for example. We wouldn't do that. Also, I think that a game they're playing is to convince white people in the United States that they're still the overwhelming majority when we're not. We're very close to the edge being 50%. And they don't want us to know that. They want it to be an accomplished fact. And then, oh, surprise, surprise, look. We're not the majority we thought we were. That's what's happening.
2017 marks the white children are the minority now.
Yes. And in fact, in many places, it's been that way. It's that way already.
I think you mean newborn children.
I think he means children in school.
Oh, children in school. I do know that in certain states, like California, the majority of the births are non-white and have been for quite some time. Texas is getting there.
The birth rate for white families in America altogether is only 1.6. For a society to survive, it has to have a minimum of 2.11.
Again, this leads into the solution. We are going to have to gather up the remnant of the white population of this country and get it all into one place and get these non-whites out of here so that we can physically separate, so that we can intermarry and interbreed with our own kind only and raise a few more generations of white children in health and safety, both physical and moral safety, and just get our numbers back up. If we are to have any hopes of survival, and this has to be done now. We are out of time.
We got 9 years before we're gone.
Okay. I want to jump in here and say something just relative to Dave's question there. He was mentioning bringing up the statistics, FBI crime statistics and whatever, to use as examples, I guess, to show people. But I would say to that, and I talked about this on a podcast a couple months ago, that a lot of the people, and probably most of them now, are not really persuaded by stuff like that. But if there are no stats to show them, I probably wouldn't use that anyway. All you have to do is show them the examples that you can find of anecdotal stuff where a black goes and slaughters a bunch of people, or that thing last week in San Francisco, things like that. Real examples that give the emotional message, not just a bunch of numbers.
I agree with you completely.
Well, yeah, that being said, though, I mean, there's enough of that going on out there in today's world where if that was enough, then all of our people should pretty well be on board, right? Apparently, like I said, looking at what's right in front of your face isn't good enough.
Well, propaganda works, and that's why people, intelligent people with billions of dollars, spend billions of dollars on propaganda. It works.
Real stories of real people, I think, are much more stronger of a persuasion tool than trying to show them numbers. And a lot of people, I see your point. I mean, they don't want to look at the stuff. They don't want to think about it, even if they have seen it. You got to think of a creative way to get those kind of stories in front of them so they have to.
I think that's a good point.
We've been conditioned from birth almost by the culture, if you want to call it that. That's in everything, the politics, the media, the whole atmosphere. If we're white, we must not even think of these things, never mind mentioning them. Richard from Florida, I believe you had the floor.
The comment about the birth rate, I think you have to realize that most responsible white people that are racially aware, they're responsible. In the conditions we have to live in, we tend to smaller families to survive, where the sub-races, they seem to just proliferate and throw 10 kids out there, and like some animals do. Some animals have large litters, figuring a few of them aren't going to make it.
Yeah.
So under our present conditions, to increase the birth rate is pretty hard. So with the thrust of Northwest Front, to get people where it's a white environment, where it's safe and we can survive, I suspect the birth rate would go way up. I've only had 2 children in my life, but, you know, now I get a little older. If I could swing it, I would love to have more, but you have to survive also. So we're at a real disadvantage when it comes to birth rate.
I got 5, but and none of them speak to me, so...
Is because of socioeconomic conditions. Like, for example, we're responsible white people, so we have the kids that we can care for, that we can educate, that we can feed, that we can raise, right? Whereas the other people, they just have them whenever the crotch itches.
And others pay for them. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then also, the system is set up, so we take some of our energy to raise other people's kids through taxation, welfare, it goes on and on. So we're at a real disadvantage here.
Yes, the government supports these low-level, legal and illegal non-white immigrants, and they don't support us. We pay for it.
Yeah, and there's actually a solution for that, taking care of your family, if people would actually go out and farm the land and only contribute to their own race. That's right, there's a solution.
I have to say this for the blacks and the Mexicans and the Asians especially. They have a racial solidarity. It's almost instinctive with them that we lack. They are members of their community, members of their race first. It seems to be almost instinctive with them. White people basically view themselves as individuals, and they may have an ethnic connection with whatever country in Europe they came from, but it's more of a hobby than anything else, like the guy with a little Irish shamrock bumper sticker and all this sort of stuff. But somehow or other, we have to develop that type of racial instinctive solidarity, and I think we will, because I believe that the realization that we are now a minority in our own land is finally beginning to sink through. I mentioned this in last week's Radio Free Northwest. I'm much more optimistic long-term about the level of awareness in white people, because it's gotten to the point where so many white people have individual experiences of the various problems related to race. They've been crime victims. They've been economic victims in various ways. They've lost a job to affirmative action, or their kid can't get into college because of the racial or gender quotas. So it's gotten to the point where the mess has started to affect almost every white person in the country, unless you're super duper rich and one of the 1%. So the awareness is there. We have the potential for a true revolutionary movement in this country, because we have a deeply discontented, angry, and frustrated people who want change and want action. It's just we can't get our message to them.
Exactly. That's the one thing that I have a problem with here. I got 5 members here in the U.S., but I got thousands over there in Europe. They get the message. They know what needs to be done. But here in America, the American whites, they choose to take the coward's way out and just let it happen.
Doesn't it have to do with the fact that we've all still got it a little too good? I mean, it's getting worse, right? But most guys that are having some economic hardships and whatnot, you look at their house, they've still got a 50-inch television and 2 brand new cars. Of course, they'll never pay them off. The bank owns them. They don't. But we still have it a little too good to get that solidarity that Harold is talking about.
It seems to me, though,
the other racial groups have that solidarity because they had a period of perceived hard times to bring them together. I don't know if our times have gotten hard enough.
Well, they're going to be getting there. The affluence level among white people has grown less and less, especially over the past 10 years. I was talking with a trucker earlier this evening. He was mentioning that down in California, he sees what's called Obamavilles. A lot of the inhabitants of those Obamavilles are white. He mentioned he sees a lot of the cardboard people begging, basically, in various truck stops and whatnot. Now, I don't know whether these guys are just professional beggars or drunks or whatever, but according to what I can see in more or less legitimate news stories on the net, a lot of them are white people who have genuinely fallen on hard times. A lot of them have been evicted from their McMansions because both husband and wife lost their jobs. I genuinely believe that we have at least the beginning of a genuine revolutionary consciousness, if you want to use that term, among white people. I think that the majority of white people are aware of the fact that we are a minority, that we are under threat, and it is an existential threat, and they would be willing to respond to the Northwest Front and its message. As I said earlier this week, a lot of them are responding with organic migration. A lot of people are coming here to the Northwest just basically to get away from the crap in the rest of the country, and they don't even know we exist. They're doing it for racial reasons. They won't admit that they're doing it for racial reasons, but they are, and it's happening.
It's like in Europe, they put out this thing. The revolution does not start 1,000 miles away. It begins with you.
Hey, Harold, on what you said about white people getting together and being cohesive, white people do some, but the circumstances have to be correct. This is my observations through life. Church groups, Jehovah's Witnesses, certain lodges, they form a cohesive group. They're loyal to each other. They help each other. They help you get jobs, help your kids get into school. I think if the circumstances are right and the incentives are there, I think white people will come together. But the way it is now, this government and this false reality that they have set up for us, they're living in, they can't see their way out to find their soul again, what they're supposed to be, the way life is supposed to be. If you can get the right message to them and the incentive is there and they can clearly see where they'll be better off, they'll go. Our organization, to most people that are secure where they're living, they're secure in their employment, got a couple of bucks in the bank, and the kids have all their friends, and they look at moving to the Northwest as a risky situation for them. They're going to lose ground. It reminds me of a friend of mine from Germany one time. He told me the Germans are best when their backs are against the wall. Well, maybe that's where we got to be to wake people up.
Well, it's one of the reasons I've always said that probably the most important individual chapter of any book I ever wrote was chapter 6, I think it was, of the first section of Freedom's Sons, when it talks about the family in Chicago, and they've managed to survive in a majority non-white society for many years, as bad as it's been for them. But then all of a sudden, the guy comes home from work, and he's been laid off to begin with. And then he comes in the door and he finds a dead nigger lying on his living room because the nigger, using some quasi-legal authority, came in and tried to take his 13-year-old daughter away, and the teenage son just shot him. And all of a sudden, there it is. This family is now confronted with the problem of race in a way that cannot be explained away or dealt with in any fashion that will allow the family to survive. That's it. It's their turn. The monster is coming for them. Now, of course, in my novel, there is a newly established Northwest Republic. And so what this family has to do is to literally flee with nothing but the shirts on their back and whatever gas they can put in the van or whatever, and just get Northwest any way they can. That is the future of millions of white people, because at some point this thing is going to come apart. Now, we may not have our Northwest Republic at the time. The Northwest Front may have just sort of crumbled away or something, as I was talking about earlier. But even if we're not here, the fact is the Northwest is going to be the last remaining place of refuge for white people in this society when it finally does come unglued and the fire starts. And one way or the other, there is going to be, at some point in the future, some kind of genuinely massive flight of white people to the Northwestern and possibly central western areas of this continent. Maybe Colorado and Utah and Wyoming will be included. But at some point in time, regardless of what the party does, white people are simply going to have to flee. They are going to have to flee from the East Coast. They are going to have to flee from the South. They're going to have to flee from the Rust Belt Midwest. And the only place for Americans traditionally to flee or move or whatever is westward. Now, this is going to happen. Oh, by the way, there'll also be a big mess coming up from the South, the last remaining whites in California, because California is virtually gone already. This is going to happen.
Well, you got Northern California that's got a pretty large white movement there, like in Marysville and Yuba County area.
But those are small numbers of people. If you're talking about large metropolitan areas, For example, the San Francisco Bay Area. Boy, is that gone Asian big time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's gone gay, too.
San Francisco's also gone yuppie. I gather that housing is almost impossible to obtain there because basically Google's moved in and you got all these techie yuppies being imported, some of them are white, some of them are gooks, some of whom are strange, weird, perverted individuals of various kinds. But they we're seeing some of this in Seattle as well. I've spoken about this before on Radio Free Northwest. There's a kind of a techie boom and a housing shortage here in the city itself. I mentioned this before, but in San Francisco, I gather, it's really bad. You can't get a little boarding house room for less than $1,500 a month or something.
They want $5,000 for a one-bedroom apartment in some parts of San Francisco.
I'm really not sure what the hell they think they're doing because they're driving their own service class out of the city. We had a little bit of this in Chapel Hill when all the Yankees moved down and bought all of the decent housing in the town itself because they're working for the university. Basically, both the blacks and the whites who did all the work, fixed the cars and waited on the tables and cooked the burgers and swept the streets and were cops and firemen and everything, they had to move all the way over into Chatham County and ended up doing like a 50-mile commute every day because in the so-called southern part of heaven, southerners couldn't afford to live there because all these blasted outsiders came in with all their money and raised the property values and took over all the available housing. And
it sounds like you talk about organic migration, but the thing is, you even mentioned in A Distant Thunder that once the government got a hold of what was going on with that revolutionary movement, that they started deporting white people, they started importing non-white to the Pacific Northwest, and we've seen that they've done that historically in this country with Hmongs coming out of Southeast Asia.
They got put in Wisconsin,
places,
I believe.
And if the powers that be understand what's going on with this, like you said, organic migration, people not even necessarily affiliated or interested or in the know about the party or whatnot, sooner or later won't they start saying, well, hey, you know, we need a little bit more diversity.
Well, that's already happening.
Importing refugees, and I mean, how are you going to gain that organic majority that you're talking about?
Well, first off, that's already happening. I think that's how we ended up slated to get 5,000 Syrians in Idaho. And apparently that hasn't happened yet, but it's on the cards. As to how we're going to do it, I will tell you how we're going to do it. You people out there are going to get up off your butts. You're going to come here to the homeland, and we are going to acquire some boots on the ground. We are going to acquire communities all across the Northwest, and you guys, not just me sitting here behind this microphone, are going to be out there on the streets, in the workplaces, in the malls, in the diners, whatever you have to do, and you are going to start building a genuine political movement consisting of the woodchucks, the local people, etc., etc. I cannot do this alone. Now, if this doesn't happen, we're going to be in trouble. This can be done. There is no question at all that it can be done. The demographics are in favor of it. History is in favor of it. The economics are in favor of it.
Could I make a point? I remember reading in Freedom Sons that scenario that you mentioned that took place, and that's kind of the extreme. But, and I've had this happen to me, every time you bang heads, you run up against these liberals or the dark races, when there's some kind of animosity or some words exchanged, when I think about it, I lose no matter what I do. I got to back away. So everybody has something in common with that chapter in Freedom Sons. When push comes to shove, you're going to lose if you're bucking up against the system. If you don't wind up in jail, they'll wreck you economically. Our backs are almost against the wall. There's not much we can do. I mean, we can just go about our lives and hope nothing happens.
Comrade, I agree with you completely. And the answer to that is that people like Harold and me and others who are economically bulletproof can speak in public without losing our income. Now, as far as the government becoming even more oppressive and just arresting us for speaking out, that's maybe the next step, but it hasn't happened yet. And the primary function of the Northwest Front right now is propaganda, pure and simple, to get the message out and to get people aware, make sure people know we're here, make sure people know about the Butler Plan, the migration to the Northwest. That's our primary function at the moment. If it becomes illegal to even say that, that then is maybe the next phase or the phase after.
Well, I wanted to add something to that. I see a lot of people, they look to, like, Which Way Western Man, what happened to him when he had that whole little area right there, like what you're talking about, all whites there, and then they come in and they kill him and his family, and then they build the world's largest ASPCL building on it.
I don't remember that section of the book. It's been a long time since I've read Which Way Western Man.
Yeah, that's the ending of it.
Yeah, well, we're not a little area. The Northwest is a very large area, and it was chosen partly for that reason. It has to be big enough to accept this influx and growth of a pure white population.
Mm-hmm. Don made a point. One of the things that we need, and I've been talking about this in the organizational letters, is we need a professional party. Eventually, we are going to have a staff. We are going to have employed local organizers who are paid at least a minimum salary specifically so that they can be financially bulletproof and not subject to this type of retaliation. That, of course, is another problem that's going to be solved when we stop talking only to each other and we start bringing in more people and they become financial supporters and so forth. But it's another reason I tell young white men who come to me and ask about career advice, and a lot of them do, I tell them to get a trade. Learn to do something with your hands. I wish when I was younger I had done that. Be a plumber, a carpenter, an electrician, a car mechanic, a hardware computer IT guy, or a very good computer guy even with a software, although that field is being taken over largely by Asians. But as long as you can do something for which there is a demand, and you can do it well, and you can do it cheaper than the next guy, you will always work, and there will always, in this society, be demands for artisans, craftsmen, people that can actually do things with their hands, build things, make things, not just sit in a cubicle tapping on a computer screen. This is one of our many problems. Too many white people, young men and women, have this idea of the world of work that they're going to spend the rest of their working life sitting in a cubicle tapping on a computer screen, and for a lot of them, that's how they end up. Another of the many problems we have is that a lot of our construction type and maintenance type jobs are being taken over by these illegals who do half-assed jobs, and it's almost apparently legendary in the industry that Mexicans are hideous, horrible mechanics. But if you can do something that people want done and you can do it well and cheaper, they're in the long run not going to care what your politics are. They're just going to have a job or an air conditioner or a TV or a computer or a car that needs to be fixed, and they're going to say, hey, come here, do this, and I'll pay you X amount of dollars. So I think that's one thing that we need to be conveying to young white people. Don't dick off in school and take every shop course and every math course and every practical course that will get you a trade that you can. If you're fortunate enough to be able to go to college, don't get some useless degree in English literature or political science. You need to learn some kind of skill or trade whereby you can earn your living and be functional in society.
That's why I've always done ranch hand work, even though I have a master's degree in zoology.
Hal, I have to say I completely agree with what you're saying. I work with guys on the oil field that have went to school. They've majored in beer and fornication for 4 years, ran up huge student loan debt, and I'm their boss because at the end of the day, regardless of how educated they are, I provide a better service to the company, to our clients, to that type of thing through hands-on experience and time in the workforce and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So they're $100,000 in debt, and they're taking orders from me. So I couldn't agree more with that.
Yeah,
that's something David Lane taught me. I wrote him for 13 years before he died. He couldn't express that more to me than going out and doing farm work or putting my skills to use instead of being like everybody else and just go and get the easy job where they can just sit around all day.
You know, Harold, you're completely right about working with your hands, because when you create something, when you fix something,
When you make something, you're creating wealth. The paper-pushing jobs and service jobs, you're somebody else's servant, is really what you are. You're exactly right. Just imagine a guy that's a carpenter. He can build his own house. He can repair his own house. He's making money left and right because he's got skills that apply in a whole bunch of different areas. You're exactly right.
We've still got the trucker here. Trucker, you want to say hello to any of these new guys?
Yeah, any of you that are planning on migrating to the homeland, pretty easy to get across. Now, I'm not sure about from Alaska, it's a little bit more of a challenge, but if the diggers, local population, whatever, decide to have a few uprisings and stuff, and you're going to end up having a lot of people trying to go and do a mass exodus all at once. And I've also heard that, like, it takes anywhere from as few as 9 to as many as a few dozen well-placed shots at certain strategic transformer sites, and this whole country will go dark.
I think someone tried that about 2 years ago down in Silicon Valley.
Somebody did something with some internet cables a couple of weeks ago in pretty much the same area. And that story came and went real quick. One day it was on Drudge, and the next day it just dropped out of sight.
Yeah, nobody's figured out who did the original Silicon Valley hit, except that some special forces types who were part of an official team investigating it said that whoever did it exactly the same way they would have done it.
And I thought it was really interesting when I read about that, because it was such a small article in the newspaper, and I thought it was such a big event to get such little media coverage that there had to be something going on.
This is one of the reasons that I've always maintained that we have a lot more hope for the future than we may think. Because, again, without inciting or anything, I'm just predicting, I'm just making an observation. The simple fact is that this country is very intricately wired and hooked together, and it would not take all of that much effort to basically completely wreck the whole show. I mean, look at what 18 young men with box cutters were able to do on September the 11th, 2001. Crashing a few airplanes into buildings managed to bring the whole economy down almost, and it has effects and ramifications which are still felt today because we're still involved in a couple of stupid pointless wars where we don't seem to have any idea what we're doing. But basically, that one act by a small number of dedicated young men, whatever you may think of their dedication, has had long-range lasting effects on the great American empire and definitely struck a blow against this country and thereby for the freedom of the rest of the world. So if and when the situation ever becomes such that, in essence, there is no more rule of law and you wouldn't be breaking any laws because there wouldn't be any more law left, put it that way, this whole mess would be quite easy for a relatively small number of people to just take down, and it might not be us. Eventually, some group of weirded out Occupy Wall Street types might figure that out. Let's just talk about Occupy Wall Street, for example. I think since they're lefties, it's a safe example. Let's say that they had used those 10, 15,000 young stupid punks they had camping in that park in New York, sitting in front of banks in San Francisco, getting pepper sprayed by police and stupid crap like that. Let's say they decide to use those 15,000 or so people for something more elaborate and ambitious, put it that way. A small number of truly dedicated people could, in essence, bring this entire tyranny down. They know it, and I think that's one of the reasons why I'm seeing signs that the people who run the United States are as jumpy as cats on a hot tin roof. That's why they overreact to almost everything.
Yeah, look what happened yesterday with the airport and Wall Street. Mm-hmm. Some type of glitch happened, and it shut them all down. No planes in or out or any of that.
What we want in the Northwest Front, our own sovereign republic here in the Northwest, is not impossible of achievement. The question is, will we be able to attract the type of people who are willing to undergo personal risk and inconvenience in order to achieve a achievable goal? It all gets back to the issue of the quality of the people and the character of the white race in America. What has been done to us over the past 50 years of these Jews and these lefties shoveling toxic waste into our skulls through that damn television and elsewhere, otherwise. So,
that's what I tell my unit all the time. It's about quality, not quantity.
It can be done. That's one of the things I find very frustrating, is I don't seem to be able to convey to people my sense of possibility about this. We are not crying for the moon here. This society is in the process of collapse. Someone is going to pick up the pieces. And it ain't going to be Hillary Clinton. And it ain't going to be Donald Trump. Sometimes I'm on Radio Free Northwest or whatever, and I just want to sort of start banging on things and screaming, for God's sake, get on with it.
Yeah, I hear that. Well, and then you got the people that always want to be the guy in power. Oh, I want to be the boss. And, well, there is no boss. We're all bosses together. One mind.
Harold, it's got to be getting better. In the 2 years that I've been reading the Northwest novels, listening to the podcasts and everything else, I can tell you that initially speaking, when I talked to people, that no one had ever even heard of you.
Yeah.
And now people, oh yeah, I ran across that website, or I heard something about this or whatever. So in 2 years, something's changing for you. I don't know what you're seeing on your end for numbers. I wouldn't expect you to say anything online, but I would think that something's got to be changing.
Well, let me say something there without giving away the store. Harold, in recent times, has been saying over and over again that it's happening. Slowly, but it's happening, and that it seems to be accelerating.
One thing that is the result of this Dylan Roof thing is that we are getting a lot more media attention. We are getting more media inquiries and more reports on websites, etc., etc. And the result of all this is that we're getting more hits on the website. And I'm hoping that this won't be just a completely temporary surge. We've had some publicity in the past, and what usually happens is there's a temporary surge in hits on the website, and then it fades back to its previous level. But in this case, the stories do seem to kind of be coming on. They keep coming. I'm not going to get into details, but there has been a distinct rise in the number of hits on the website over the past couple of weeks, and I'm hoping we're picking up more people there. I want for there to be a diffused idea that sort of creeps by osmosis all throughout white America, that at least some notion is in the back of people's minds that, well, there are these people that want to go make an all-white nation in the Pacific Northwest. I mean, what were their names? Seems to me I heard something about that, the laundromat or whatever. That right there will be an excellent first step, just getting the idea itself, white homeland in the Pacific Northwest, to just sort of ooze into the skulls full of mush all over the country. They might not be interested in it. They might not know who's involved. They might think, oh, that's racist. I can't have anything to do with that. But I want them to know that the idea exists. I want them to be aware of the fact that somebody is at least trying to do something about this problem. And then when they're walking home from work one night, or they're in the store or something, and a couple of niggers in hoodies come up and beat them and take their wallets, or if they're a woman, maybe if they get, you know, badly hurt in some way, or if a loved one is badly hurt in some way by niggers, or if they themselves, or if a member of their family or someone they know is badly hurt by the system in some way, all of a sudden they're going to sit down and say, wait a minute, this horrible thing just happened to this person that I know, this is someone that I love. The system clearly isn't working. The system caused the problem. Maybe these guys that have this idea about running off into the Northwest and making our own country for white people, maybe there's something to that. Let me get out my computer here and kind of Google white nation in Northwest, and I think right now, even if you Google that, you'll come up with Northwest Front.
There's a few things you can Google, and it'll bring you to your page.
Yeah, hey,
I think
like
we should get some more people putting flyers out there. That way, it puts it into their mindset. They can walk by a billboard and see something.
I don't know how many of you guys actually saw the Guardian and the Politico articles, but according to the Guardian article, I'm a right-wing science fiction author, which is weird. And according to the Politico article, we are the worst racists in the country. We make even the Confederates look nice.
We're vicious.
Yeah, right.
I personally believe any publicity that the Northwest Front gets, good or bad, is good for us, because I don't know about you guys,
But anything the government says, anything the media says, their credibility is almost at zero. You can hardly believe the weather report.
It's rain and it's sunny.
It is possible to get bad publicity, believe me, I've had it happen.
Yeah, but when the government says that the organization is these awful white people that want to live by themselves, some people's minds, they got to say, hey, I got to look into this.
I have no real objection to the Guardian article or the Politico article. Both were, frankly, what I would have expected from those media sources. And they weren't nearly as bad as they could have been. The guy at Politico, he was trying to schmooze me online, trying to get some kind of response from me. And since I'm aware of what Politico is, I didn't bother to reply. But he was telling me, oh, I'm from Portland. I'm one of you. And I said, yeah, I'm not working for Politico, you ain't. But when I looked at the finished product, I saw that a lot of his article, about half of his article, was just how horrible and terrible and racist Oregon was, which is interesting for all those people who think, well, the Northwest is full of liberals, actually.
He made a good point. Oregon and say that.
Well, the original Oregon State Constitution specifically stated that it was for white people only. It was never enforced, unfortunately. Right. And that was only repealed in 2007, I think. Somebody finally noticed it and think, well, this is an embarrassment. We got to get rid of this. Both of those two articles were, again, about what you would expect. There have been a lot of spin-offs from that. The result, as I've said, is a fair amount of hits on the website. I believe will increase our overall readership and viewership and listenership to the RFN accordingly. So, altogether, it's been to the good. The headlines are calling me the shadowy white supremacist who inspired Dylann Roof, which is cocked. Because not only did I never even know that he existed beforehand, but he actually stated in his manifesto that he rejected the Northwest migration, but picky. Never let the facts get in the way of the agenda. We've got six people left.
Okay. What I wanted to do is a little bit different. Was, do they know that what is the second most translated book in the world besides the Bible? Does anyone know the answer?
The Brigade?
You know, does anyone know what the second most translated book is?
It'd be Mein Kampf.
That's the first question. It's Mein Kampf.
Okay, I'm going to interpose a bit here. What followed was a discussion on religion. And look, if that's what the guys wanted to talk about, fine, we talked about it. But as I have said before, we now have to bear in mind who is listening to this program. And after listening to the footage, in my opinion, the discussion of religion, while not completely inappropriate here, would have offered opportunities for the enemy to capitalize on some of the things that were said, and I don't think we need to give them that kind of opportunity, so I have taken the liberty of cutting out a section here, which is why there seems to be this odd little gap.
It's like that preacher that took all them people up to Eagle Rock and told them that if they want to go to heaven, to jump off the rock, and like five or six people jump.
Well, I guess that's one way to do it. That's an interesting thing, though. Let's assume for the sake of argument that war was going to end on September 23rd, and somehow or other we knew this or we had it proven to our satisfaction that it was really going to happen. You know, kind of wonder, okay, today's July the 9th. That'd give you about 10 more weeks. What the hell would you do with all that time? It's an interesting topic for a novel.
I think it's just to install hostility and make the world go crazy.
Now, you've noticed, this actually does have a little bit of an interesting application. I'm sure you've noticed recently, if you follow movies at all, there's a lot of disaster movies. There was one that was in 2012, I can't remember the name of it, but had a really great final scene of Los Angeles falling into the sea because of some kind of earthquake or national disaster. I love watching things like that.
I think it was Quakes.
I've actually got a copy of Independence Day, not because I want to watch that nigger Will Smith, but about once a year, I'll take it out and I'll just turn to the scene where I get to see the White House blown up by the flying saucer. I understand there's British guys who have V for Vendetta, not because of all the Lesbo stuff, but they just love to see the Houses of Parliament being blown up. I think there is a big element in this society that wants it to end, and they are so desperate and so frustrated and so full of despair that anyone is ever going to do anything about all this horse manure that's going on, that they keep hoping for some kind of big disaster that will just come and just sweep it all away and blow it all away. If white men aren't man enough to stand up and fight for themselves, maybe an earthquake will wipe out all the niggers, or a tsunami yeah. will wash away New York. I would not at all object to seeing, say, New York City completely washed away, because what's there left that's worth saving? Nothing. Miami, Florida. Mm-hmm. It's a third world city now. There's nothing left there that is of
any
interest.
Look at Southern California.
Most of the state of California, yeah. California actually may be in the process of getting wiped out. Apparently, this drought they've got down there is really, really, really bad, and there is no signs of it ending. And I have this horrible fear that eventually it's going to get to the point where everybody in California, white, black, or brown, is going to start fleeing up here just to get some of our rain.
Yeah, there's been quite a few of the aqueducts that have gone past that are just dry.
And they're getting all their water from, what is it? It's right by Greenville, where Black Bart was robbing stagecoaches back in 1800s or whatever. They ship all their water from there down to Southern California.
Yeah, I know Lake Mead is really low.
I know Southern California, when the Spanish came, was mostly natural desert. It's actually, as I read somewhere, that the first couple of colonies the Spanish attempted to establish on the site of what is now Los Angeles perished, or they had to evacuate because they just couldn't sustain themselves.
Hey, does anybody know, I read somewhere that just before this drought, they were emptying the reservoirs in California. Is that true? Do any of you guys know that?
No, that's not true. I'm from Northern California. I just moved to Nevada last year.
There was a case in Southern California where there was some contamination, and they did that to one reservoir.
And they were going to divide California into, like, six different, like, states because of the water.
That would be some improvement. They're never going to do that, though, because the large part of Northern California is still predominantly white, I think, despite it all. And there's too much chance that they might return Republican congressmen. And also, you would break up the state of California's massive vote total in the Electoral College, which is something like 70-some-odd now, I think. And that's one, of course, that the Democrats have to have. They're just not going to take that kind of political risk, so any hope for a state of Jefferson or anything like that is pretty much...
It ain't going to happen. Yeah.
That's one of the early Northwest Republic ideas, the state of Jefferson. They wanted to create Northern California. It was a fairly serious movement at one stage, but then Pearl Harbor intervened and everybody forgot about it.
I gotta go now. Thank you for having me on your show.
Okay.
All right. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Yeah, I was going to say something again about water. There's another thing that was suspected in the future. They're pumping so much water out of the aquifers. I was up in the Northwest a few years back, and it seems like you guys got plenty of water up there. That's another reason to migrate.
Certainly, the Puget Sound area has no problem with water.
Oh, no. We're actually going through our 3 months of summer here where the rain kind of slacks off. But believe me, we got plenty of water the other 9 months.
Well, I just gave you a little anecdote. I built a water storage facility for a county in New Jersey. And I got to talking to the people, most of the people in the northern part of New Jersey, they supply the cities and towns with well water. Every year, they got to drill the wells deeper. This was 18 years ago they were doing this because of pollution and because the water table kept dropping.
I lived in San Antonio about 18 years ago. It was bad then, and it was generally acknowledged that it's because basically all the damned illegal aliens were drinking up the water. They used to have rubber inner tube races down the Brazos River from the hill country in Texas. Don't do that anymore because there's no water. Rio Grande, which means big river in Spanish, used to be a big river. Now it's just a drainage ditch. Because the wetbacks don't get their backs wet swimming across because it's just no water because there's too goddamn many Mexicans who are drinking it all and using it all and pissing it up against a wall. And they used to be able to grow watermelons in South Texas. They don't grow those there anymore. They can't because they don't have the water. 18 years ago, San Antonio was looking at real trouble because their aquifer was just way, way down and they were having a drought and... it was a mess. I don't know what it's like there now, but probably not very good.
Yeah. I also heard that the Colorado River, by the time it gets to California, nothing goes in the Pacific. Mm-hmm. It's used at all. Harold, I'm going to go.
We're running out of time here as well.
Yeah, it was a great show. Thank you.
The finished product will be a lot shorter than the 2 hours, and we're going to have to do a lot of editing. This is experimental, and eventually we're going to get it nailed down. Anyway, thanks everybody for calling. Appreciate it. Yep. And we may or may not be able to do this next week, depending on how our schedule comes up, but we'll see if we can get this show up on the website by, say, Saturday, Sunday, maybe.
Yeah, you may have noticed we had technical problems up to this point. I think we have them under control now, but you never know when they'll strike again.
Okay, guys. Have a good evening. Night. And what can I tell you? Sasha and the Bond. Freedom.